And welcome back. Most professional comics are vagabonds traveling from place to place hoping to make people laugh, such as the life of Greg Warren, who has spent the last 15 years or so doing just that. It has gotten him exposure on the national TV stage and in clubs around the country. Now it is bringing him home to St. Louis, where he'll be appearing at the Funny Bone later this week. Welcome, Greg Warren. Nice to have you here.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks a lot.
You know, I can't imagine a more difficult life than doing what I just described, traveling around the country, hoping to and trying to, and in most cases, making people laugh. That's got to be a tough gig.
Well, I'm really careful about saying that it's a tough gig because some people work for a living. So, I mean, the travel of it does get a little bit tedious sometimes. But the stage is the most – that's the most comfortable hour of the day for me, really. Yeah, it's almost a relief to be there. Yeah.
You're doing it from St. Louis now. We just learned just before going on the air that this is your base of operations now.
Yeah, I've been all over. We were talking most recently in New York. Which is a very different place. Have you spent any time there, Don?
I grew up 14 miles from New York City.
Oh, from the city. Okay, yeah. So you know. Yeah, it's different from St. Louis. This is sort of how I explain New York. I got some luggage when I was there. I got one of those roller bags that you pull behind you, and the handle broke off. Uh-huh. So I had to pick it up and I had to carry it. And I was walking through the city, and I passed this guy, and he goes, hey, it's got wheels. You don't have to carry it. He thought I was that dumb and he was that smart. Like in his head, he was like, I see things that other people don't see. I have a gift. I got to share the gift. Yeah.
Well, New York is famous for helping out. No one has offered to help you carry the thing. That's for sure. Yeah. Everybody's doing his and her own thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you feel any particular pressure performing at home?
Not really. Other than... You know, I have a lot of friends and family and some fans that have been really good about coming out every year, and so I do sort of feel some pressure to have some new material.
You got 5 days here at the Funny Bone.
Yeah,
right?
I do. Yeah, four, I think. Four. Yeah, but
I thought there was something through Monday.
It's Thursday through Sunday, and. Sort of – actually, we're trying something new this year also. I think on Sunday at 5 o'clock I'm doing an all-ages show. So – or like 12 and up. So it's like a family show. I do feel a little pressure there because I haven't done a whole lot of that before.
Is your act such that it would probably not be a good idea to invite children to it, the evening performances?
No, I mean, I wouldn't say – I don't think any kids really should be at mini comedy shows. Not because it's particularly dirty or anything, but it is sort of you know, it's comedy. It's a little bit negative. It's a little bit sarcastic. Yeah. But the show – I have done a lot of shows recently where kids were there and I realized I could do it. And my act is pretty clean anyways. So I have a lot of friends that have kids that have always asked, hey, can I bring my kid? And I was like, all right, we're going to do a special show where you can bring your kids.
Huh? When did the bug bite you? How old were you when you realized this is where you wanted to go?
Well, I sort of – let's see. My first job out of college – Well, my first job out of college, I got a degree in journalism, actually, Don.
So but then you went straight, right?
Yeah, I got a degree in journalism, and I promptly got a job as a busboy at Denny's on I-44 and Berry Road. Ah, and that was great. The guys in the kitchen at Denny's knew that I went to college. So they're, oh, if it ain't the most educated busboy in America, how you doing today, college? Fine. Dana, listen, Table 9 wanted sausage patties, but I brought him sausage links instead. Oh, I guess they didn't teach you about that in college, huh? You didn't have any sausage classes in college? No, I majored in journalism. Oh, we're a reporter. Well, here's today's top story, college. Patties are the flat ones. Yeah. So I did there. And then I got a job. I sold Pringles potato chips.
I saw that. Did you? By the way, the guy at Denny's sounds an awful lot like the guy from New York.
I need to work on the different.
Pringles potato chips, huh?
Yeah. I was working for Procter & Gamble. I got sent to Houston, Texas. And, I would call in different grocery stores. And I was actually pretty excited to have that job. I remember the day I got the job. You know, I was at Denny's at the time, so I was like, okay, this is great. But I was really proud, and I was like, this is my first big job. They gave me a car and a salary, and I thought that everybody would be impressed. I thought women would be impressed, and I remember talking to some girl at a bar that night, and I said, yeah, I just got a pretty big job. She goes, what are you doing? I said, I'm selling Pringles. She goes, Like door to door? Yeah, door to door. Yeah, I actually joined the Girl Scouts and we ran out of cookies. Now we just sell potato chips. But
that does sound like a punchline. I'm selling Pringles.
Yeah, I know, and it's not. I really did. Yeah. It was a good product.
You know, I saw that you also went to West Point. I mean,
I did. Yeah.
Tell me about that. I mean, and you left. You chose to leave.
I did. Yeah. I did. Why? Yeah. Well, I'm still not sure why I went. I think it had something to do with adults were impressed by it. Here's why I think I went, Don. I got a call from – I was a pretty good wrestler in high school.
Your dad was a wrestling coach.
Yep, at Kirkwood. Yeah. And I got a call from the coach from West Point one night, and he said, we'd really like you to come wrestle here. And the next day I was in class at Kirkwood High School, and I was sitting next to Liz Miller, and she was the prettiest girl in our high school. And I said, Liz, the coach – from West Point called me last night and he wants me to wrestle there. And she said, wow, that's pretty cool. That's the reason right there. And uh-huh. I think that's just about it.
Yeah.
I think that's no, I'm not sure. I think I wanted him, you know, people, it seemed like an honor and, it was nice that they wanted me to go and I got a lot out of it, but I don't think I really belonged to that.
How long did you go there?
The full year. I sort of made a deal with myself that if I was going to do it, I was going to, you know, stay for a full year. And I stayed for what's called your plebe year. And, you know, most people, once they make it through that, don't quit. Mm-hmm. But I just knew that I didn't want to do it.
What year would this have been, Greg?
It was I graduated high school in 1986. So from sort of you know, that summer, I had about 3 weeks off, and then the summer of 86 through, you know, June of 87. I remember we used to have to memorize our chain of command. So mm-hmm. that's like, you know, who you report to, who that guy reports to, who all the way up like 50 levels to the commander in chief. Mm-hmm. I could usually remember the guy who was yelling at me at the time and Reagan. It was 86 at that time. Yeah. Reagan was about 112. I don't think he knew the chain of command either. So, well, there's Hawkeye and Klinger and me and Nancy, I believe. I went there and then.
I asked when that would have happened because I was thinking it was later than that. That if you'd gone through the 4 years, then you have a commitment of what, another 4 years?
Five years after that.
If it were later, you could have wound up in Afghanistan, Iraq.
Sure.
Sort of thing.
Well, I would have been in the first Gulf War, I think.
Yeah. In the 90s.
Yeah, I had some friends that were in that. Yeah. Although I think they were doing – at that time, I think there was quite a bit of reduction in the military. So they were letting guys out of their commitments. Mm-hmm. I think that was that whole Graham Rudman.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Don't test my memory on that stuff.
Me neither.
It's bad enough it is. What do you draw from for your comedy?
I think, you know, it's sort of a mixture of just sitting down every morning and journaling, just sort of free writing, you know, several pages. What did I do yesterday? Who did I meet yesterday? How did I feel yesterday? And that may take me to how did I feel as a freshman in high school in 1982 in Kirkwood, or it may take me, you know, other places, just sort of let it go. And then if I do that, then as I'm walking around during the day, if something – it's really hard to sit down and say what's funny. It's almost impossible. It'll drive you nuts. Mm-hmm. But if – so you start with what's different or what's interesting, and a lot of times you can sort of turn that into what's funny. I'll give you one example. I was in New York. This, you know, we were talking about New York, and so you grew up near there. You're familiar with the subway. Yeah. The subway is a mental institution. I mean, it's it takes people places, but I think that is its secondary purpose. Mm-hmm. But I was on the subway one day, and I just had a sort of a bad audition for some commercial or TV show, and I was on the subway, and I was just like, you know, it'd be great if I just had 30 seconds of peace on the subway. You know, as soon as I said that to myself, this woman just walks on the subway. She starts singing, "All I want for Christmas is a fish sandwich. All I want for Christmas is a fish sandwich." Oh, I was like, come on, lady. We're in public here. You know, guess what song has been stuck in my head for the last 6 months? That woman should not be homeless. She's a hit maker. She may be one of the greatest lyricists of our time. I mean, I've heard 11 Taylor Swift songs. I don't know the words. I know all the words to Fish Sandwich. But so that happened, and that's, you know, that's a little thing that I – story that sure. I tell. When it happened, I didn't think it was funny at all. I was like, I can't stand this woman. I'm you know, it was just annoying. And then probably 2 weeks later, I'm sitting down with a notebook, and I'm like, what has happened different? And what has happened – what interrupted the continuum of the day? And I was like, well, there's that Fish Sandwich lady. And then I was like, well, maybe I could turn that into something. And then – you know, I was able to turn it. Sure. And I tell stories about that, and people can laugh about it.
Last time I was on the New York subway, there were two guys across from me sniffing glue. I couldn't wait to get off the darn thing.
Yeah, you know, Don, that might have been quite a while ago. I'm not sure that's a big deal these days, is sniffing glue. I don't know.
It has been a while. I'll have to give you that. You know, it seemed to me that in today's environment, particularly the political environment, you've studied journalism, have a degree in
journalism.
Study
is an aggressive term.
Whatever. That was your environment. That today would be a gold mine for a comic, and for a lot of them it is.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I've never been a political comic. I have views. I have opinions. But I guess I've always it's never been an obsession with me. It's not – that's something that I'm obsessed with. It is an interest but not a big interest. But I've always sort of viewed the stage as when somebody comes to the show, let this be one place where we don't have to disagree. We're so polarized right now. It's really hard for a comedian. I've seen most of them. If you're a political comic, you're going to talk to about half the country. Roughly.
Right.
And the other people that show up to that show are going to feel alienated. And I don't want to make anybody feel alienated. I use this example like back when I was living in Houston, I used to listen to a lot of sports radio. It was just, you know, an escape or whatever. I was driving around selling Pringles and I was, you know, it was nice to just sort of escape and listen to sports radio. And then one of the guys that I used to listen to all the time started injecting politics into his sports radio program. I was like, wait a minute, I didn't sign up for that here. I don't want to get – and there was obviously – it was not my political views at all. And I was like, I don't want to get mad at you. I don't want to have to deal with this right now. And I sort of feel that's the way with my comedy show. I like political comedians, a lot of them, some of my friends. But for me, it's like, hey, if you come, you're not going to feel – you're not going to get your – defenses up.
You're absolutely right that you're going to antagonize half the audience, so regardless of how you come at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would rather not do that.
You're doing a podcast now, I understand.
Yeah.
And with a lot of St. Louis focus. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Thanks for asking. It's called Trip to the Lou, and it's
– As in St. Louis as opposed to the Lou.
Yes, yes, as in St. Louis. Yeah. I'm doing it with some friends, some local comedians, Tim Convey and Sean O'Brien and Joe Murray. And each week we go somewhere in St. Louis and then we go into the studio the next day and we just talk about it. Mm-hmm. And it's a comedy podcast. I mean, it's meant to be funny. It usually is sort of half talking about a shared experience and then half insulting each other. But
give us some sense of what that might sound like in terms of your various, as I understand it, various institutions, and then talk about them in a comedic way, right?
Yeah. I think again the key is just a shared experience. Mm-hmm. I wanted it. There's so many podcasts are like comedians interviewing comedians. I think that's overdone. And I was trying to think, what do I have a passion for? And it's St. Louis. And I also have this sort of – as a comedian who travels, a lot of road comics, you know, I travel sometimes 4 or 5 days a week. You get home for 2 days and I find myself not going anywhere. You know, I stay with the Kirkwood Starbucks, my condominium in my father's house, and that's about it. And that's not any way to live an artistic life. So I was like, how can I go get out and at least experience things? So this forces me to go out. I think today we're going to Saratoga Bowling Lanes in Maplewood. Supposedly it's the oldest bowling lanes.
I know it well.
Yeah, do you really?
On the second floor, yeah. It's an interesting place.
Yeah, we're going to go there. We went to the brewery a couple weeks ago. We went out to St. Charles and did this thing. I can't even remember. It, basically, you're in a bumper car. You have two teams of three, and you're all in a bumper car, and you have like a little scoop and you're throwing the ball at a basketball goal, essentially. That was one of the funnest times. Demolition ball, it's called. One of the funnest times we've ever had.
Really? What's it like working with other comics? My impression would be that you'd have four guys each trying to outdo the other for laughs.
You know, if you've got the right guys, it's not. I learned that a long time ago. Sort of the best thing to do in that situation is, how do you help the other guy out? You know, basically, mm-hmm. I took some improv classes, and how do you sort of set the ball on the tee for the other guy and let him take a swing? I mean, we do insult each other, don't get me wrong, but it's not really a situation of outdoing each other. And sort of stand-up comedy is a really sort of lonesome pursuit. So whenever I do anything that's not just straight joke writing and any projects, I really like collaborating. And these guys, they're really, really funny guys.
You talk about the solitary nature of stand-up. You hear a lot about comics being, when they're on, but so many of them are introverted when they're off stage. Johnny Carson is always pointed to as an example of that.
Yeah.
Is that something that you're aware of or experienced?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm certainly not completely the person that I am on stage, off stage. If I was, I think I would be a really annoying person. Nobody wants someone to be on all the time. I think basically the person I am on stage is a heightened version of who I really am. Mm-hmm. My personality comes out and it's who I am. But some people, want to see you like, hey, you're a comedian, be funny right now. I'm like, well, we're in a grocery store and I don't know you, so
so forget it.
I can try, but I'm not sure that's going to
What's it like when you're doing your act and people don't laugh? I imagine that happens occasionally.
Oh, yeah. No, I think every comic has been through that. It's I wouldn't say it's fun, but I've done comedy in so many different places, so many different settings, and so many different cities. I've done it to, a club in New York at 11:30 on a Tuesday night in front of seven people. I've done it in front of a theater of 2,000. And then I've kind of learned I kind of know a lot of the tricks. So if they're not laughing, I'm going to try all the tricks I have. But if they're not, it probably it wasn't meant to be that night. So you just, I have sort of I have sort of a little autopilot that I revert to, and my autopilot has gotten a lot better than it was, 20 years ago.
I would gather you'd probably have a go-to joke or story that always gets a good reaction.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I have a few. I think that's the key to sort of becoming a really strong road comic, is you got to have these big jokes. But when you're first starting out and you're like, okay, here's my five big jokes, and you get out there and things aren't going well, and so you go to your big joke and they don't buy that either. and then you do like three more of your big jokes. And then you're like, oh, they didn't buy any of that. Now we've got another 15 minutes of the stuff that I don't think is that great. No, that's an awful thing.
That's got to be terrible.
Yeah.
You've had some good exposure on national television. How does that help you? What happens? Do the offers pick up when you're on Seth Meyers, for instance, or something like that?
Yeah. I mean, it's it's not – it's a lot – first of all, it's fun. It's the funnest thing you could ever do, especially those late night talk shows. Yeah. Seth Meyers, I did – it was Christmas and it was – they're right next to the skating rink.
Rockefeller Center.
It's in Rock Center. So it's in New York. That was a load of fun. I've done a lot of them. As far as people coming to see you, it helps. But probably the stuff – it's weird. The stuff that has helped me the most is radio. There's, a couple of national radio shows that I've done. Serious radio plays, probably 7 or 8 of my tracks a day. And then some silly stuff that I've done. I'm a big wrestling fan, a big college wrestling fan. There's this wrestling website that I made a short film, sort of a mockumentary for. And you'd be surprised how many people identified with that.
You've done some stuff. Time is just winding down, but done some stuff. Wrestling Color Fox. I mean, Fox Midwest.
Yeah, a while back. Yeah, I did the color commentary. Yeah, well, I was average at best.
We want to thank you so much. Thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations on the gig at the Funny Bone. That's going to be happening starting Thursday night for the next 4 days.
Right,
with a kids show thrown in on Sunday.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Greg Warren. Great to talk to you.
Hey, great talking to you, honestly. I really, really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.